Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He put it in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going to Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I am Brian Merkel.
We're really glad you're here. If you have crazy and wild experience you want to share with us on the show, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. That's hammerlanelegends@gmail.com. Or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. And, Dad, it's 2020.
Yes, it is.
That means anything can happen. This year is crazy, and I don't think next year is going to be any less crazy. So you got to start preparing for that emergency in your life that could happen at any time. Whether you're in the truck on the road or at home protecting your family, you always want to make sure you have emergency supplies. And that is why we offer PrepareWithHLL.com. That's PrepareWithHLL.com. Dad, what does the HLL stand for?
I don't know, something like Hammer Lane Legends?
I think so. PrepareWithHLL.com, and you can get your emergency supplies there, including food that lasts up to 25 years shelf life. That's a great deal. And even a better deal is the fact that we'll knock $100 off for you if you get the four-week supply. I don't know what beats that.
I don't either.
Me neither.
It's a great deal.
Yeah, I think so. We'll see. If people like it, they'll get it. So if you have a voicemail line that you want to call, call our voicemail line. Dad, what is our number to our voicemail line?
Our number is 515-585-MERK. That's 515-585-6375.
Yeah, so I mean, we have that because sometimes people have a short little story they want to share on the show. They don't want to, you know, schedule an interview. The voicemail line. Have I been calling the hotmail line? It's whatever we want to make it. So it's the voicemail line. You can call that and leave us a voicemail, and we will play it on the show just like we got this week.
Even if you're not a hotmail.
If you're a hotmail, hey.
Wrong show.
I would say so. We're not judging around here. Listen, we got a voicemail for you, and then we got another one, and then we got another one. We got a lot of people calling this
week.
That
is awesome.
Yeah,
it really is cool.
We got somebody, though, that's calling the show. She's a returning guest, and you know who I'm talking about.
I think I do.
It's Susan.
Hey, Tony. Hey, Brian. It's Susan. I've been texting you all weekend, Tony, and with no reply.
Susan, I got a new number. That's why.
Sorry. He didn't even know you texted.
No idea. Carry on.
How do you like it now? Have you had to work in the Philly area? How many stores are boarded up? Are you actually going down there? You got the nerve to drive down there. Oh, by the way, I'd love to be the third person on the mic. I think we'd have a good time. All right, guys. I'll talk to you soon. Have a good one. Bye.
Well, Susan, if you are in the Philly area towing or something and it's a Sunday afternoon and we got nothing to do, feel free to give us a shout. But usually we got something to do.
You got to schedule it, Susan. You got to schedule it.
But stop by. What the heck? That'd be awesome.
That would be cool.
That'd be fun to have Susan in studio.
Text me, Susan. Oh, man. All fun and games around here. All fun and games. So, Susan, thanks for calling to the hotline and stuff. And sorry I didn't get back to you. But, yeah, the number changed. Next up, we got somebody. Let's go.
Hey, what's up, guys? I drive for a living. I left a message once, and we're transferring it over to the confessionals. But when you have something cool happen to you two times in one day, I feel like you got to tell your story. Yesterday, my midday route, I was coming down. This is in Kentucky, too, called, a place called Shelbyville. And I cut off and got into Shelbyville heading towards my load spot. And got coming through their construction, and I see this 10-wheeler, and it's coming out of a gas station in reverse, and I'm sitting there looking at it, and I'm like, I keep looking at it, and I'm like, man, this guy's got some balls, because he hammered across the two-lane, a congested two-lane, in front of vehicles, man, almost took out the north and southbound traffic on that. And it goes into it, luckily, into another gas station's driveway. And it rode all the way up and almost hit the pumps. And I sit there and says, man, what is this guy doing? And I got to thinking, I was like, if this thing rolls forward, there's nobody in that driver's seat. And sure enough, man, that thing rolled forward, back across the highway, into the other gas station's, into the other gas station. And I just sit there and I'm laying on my horn. I'm hoping that maybe the driver is going to hear it or something. And it pulls all the way up into that other gas station and rolls back through. Comes back for a second take, man. And rolls back across the highway. At this time, everybody stopped. And I'm just sitting there blowing the horn, man, trying to get somebody's attention. And luckily enough, there was two construction workers running towards it. And they jump on the sidestep of it, and I'm like, well, thank God, they're finally going to stop this. This man had got out of his truck, and more than likely only set one brake, and that brake gave. But what he done is he locked that truck up, man. So that thing for 10 minutes went back and forth across the highway until it finally stopped. And I'm just telling you, man, luckily, thank God, nobody got hurt. But that right there, that blew my mind. I was sitting there on the way to that terminal thinking, man, it's been a while since I've seen something cool happen, and lo and behold, that happened. I don't know, but like I said, luckily nobody got hurt. But my second story is later on that night, I was coming out of Springfield, Kentucky, and I had listened to a podcast somewhere where they had talked about guys that fly planes calling in about seeing people in jetpacks. One that was like 6,000 foot up and another one that was like 3,000 foot up. But I was coming through there and I normally pay attention to the sky because, if you're a driver and you pay attention to the sky, I mean, you get to see shooting stars, all kinds of crazy stuff. It's awesome. But, I was just looking, man, and this thing come hammering down through the sky. It was up there. You know, I've seen a lot of planes. I've seen a lot of big planes, a lot of little planes. And, you know, where I grew up, the Air Force uses part of that property or part of the area that we lived in as a training spot because it's close to closest thing to like Afghanistan or something. But this thing, man, it comes shooting across the sky. And the weird thing about it was it had a faint tail on it. There was no noise. I slowed down. I listened. If anything's going that fast, it's going to make a noise. But I got looking at it, man, as it crossed my line of sight, it had a slight tail to it. What the thing about it was extremely thin. It would put you in the mind of a jetpack, somebody flying a jetpack. But it was also like 32 degrees last night. But this thing come by, man, and it was orange. I didn't understand what it was, but as it passed by so fast. Well, it's fast, but it wasn't slow. You know, if you see shooting stars, you barely catch a glimpse of them. But this thing, it went by, and you could watch it go by, but you can tell that it was really moving. And like I said, it was orange and thin. And it went by, and as soon as it got past the left side of my truck, it was gone. Couldn't see it anymore. And I'm telling you, dude, it wasn't a plane. It wasn't anything that we fly. I'd say that because this thing was moving. I have never seen anything move this fast other than a shooting star. But, you know, that's the two things that happened to me in one day, man. I call it a win. I like exciting things. I love when exciting things happen. I'm into everything known to man. But, man, y'all keep up the good work. Y'all do an awesome job. Y'all just have a good day, man. Y'all just keep doing what you're doing because I look forward to listening to both your shows. I love listening to this show because you guys just, you know, you get drivers on there and y'all just talk. And it's great to sit and listen to somebody just talk about the bullshit that happens on the highway, man. We're the only ones that know about it. Nobody else does. And it keeps me awake at night, man. I run through the night. Y'all keep me going. But I appreciate it, brother. You two have a good one, man.
Right on, my Kentucky brother, man. Thank you very much for calling the show. What do you think about that, Dan?
That was really cool.
Yeah.
I know exactly what he means. I drive at night, too.
Yeah.
You need something to keep you awake. Glad we're able to do it.
When he said about, you know, watching the sky and stuff, I'm like, last time I watched the sky, I almost rear-ended somebody. I told that story on the show, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, that's unfortunate sometimes, right? So, yeah. But yeah, no, even seeing that thing go across the highway back and forth and stuff, right. I mean, come on, really?
Yeah, watching some guy's truck just rolling around.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, dude, what are you doing?
Ever hear of an air brake?
Yeah. It's the yellow button.
Yeah.
Just pull that out.
It works great when you use it.
That's amazing.
All right. Next up, we got somebody calling in the line, and they actually left two voicemails. So let's get to the first one.
Hey, Trenton. Hey, this is Emery. I drive out of South Texas over there in Edinburgh, Texas, over the road driver and pretty much all Midwest. All right, well, let's start with a story. Got plenty, actually. Remember back in 2016.
Hold on a second. He said to me, I got a story. Actually, I got plenty.
I got plenty of them.
Why are you... Email the show, bro. Carry on.
I was driving my rig, driving team at the time, as a matter of fact. And I was maybe 60 miles north of Laverne, Tennessee. I was headed southbound, and it had to been like 10, 11 o'clock at night, and I'm on the right lane, you know, slow lane, two lane, and I see my mirror white SUV. I think it was like a Expedition. I haven't seen any cars for like 30 miles, man. Very, very rural highway. Anyway, this Expedition speeds up and it matches my speed. I'm going 65. That's the tops I can go at the time that for the company I was work for. They govern in those trucks at that 65 or less. But anyway, I look over and this truck's matching my speed and see the rear windows roll down. They're all black tinted. and I see a spark right away. Holy shit, what are these guys going to do? And sure enough, I see this a wick lit, you know, like you see a piece of dynamite lit. And what I did was I slammed my brakes. And, of course, the SUV went ahead of me. I slammed my brakes. And then not even a tenth of a second later, I heard boom. And I was looking in my rear view, saw a large ass spark. You know, like an explosion. I'm like, holy crap, man. These guys are throwing dynamite or M80s. I don't know, man. But these guys proceed down the highway. Maybe about a football length down the highway. They throw another one out. It explodes, but it hits the highway. But, yeah, man, I was my partner at the time, Fidel, was sound asleep, man. I told him the story, man. He said, man, you should have boxed him in. I was like, no. I didn't want that on my record. But, yeah, that's one of the stories. I have another story. This time Fidel's driving, my partner. And this was the same year, man. It had been a crazy year. We're going down the highway. Kentucky over there. I think it was called the Bluegrass. Kentucky Highway, so nice, pretty rural during the evening, and this happened around, just so happened to happen around 10, I don't know why weird shit happens around that time, but cruising down the highway, my buddy Fidel looks over to his side, and sure enough, there's a guy, old man, butt a ball naked, legs over the steering wheel. And, yeah, man, he's jacking it. And I'm like, what the hell, dude? And we didn't know what to do. My buddy just honked the horn. He's like, dude, I was like, thinking about calling the cops, but I didn't get the plates. Didn't even think about that. We were just shocked. But, yeah, that was our time driving down the highway. Some weird stuff that goes on out here. What else? I heard your last... Oh, Dallas. That's another thing, man. I've seen dead bodies. Dallas, South 35, man. I was driving down the road, and I go over this overpass, and you can see the frontage road, and poor guy is laying on the road, and it looks like he just got pancaked by a cement truck. The ones with the big ass cylinders that hold cement. Yep. Cement truck driver was standing over the body with his truck with hazard lights on. And there's been, what else, man?
Well, it kind of just cut off there, Emery, but I see.
It did.
I see you called back, so we're going to get to you in a second, but. Man, that second story?
Holy cow.
Don't call the cops. Just let the man do his deed.
If I called the cops every time I saw that going on.
Right?
Be on the phone a lot with the cops. I have seen a lot in 27 years driving at night.
There's a lot of horny people out there driving. Next.
Hey, Tony, this is Emery again from Edinburgh, Texas. Over the road, drive over the road, pretty much all Midwest. But, yeah, the rest of my stories, here we go. I was team driving, man. Everything happens on team driving, man. I remember we were driving Laredo. I was with my buddy Lewis at the time. These very dark back roads, man. Laredo can get creepy at night. But I remember we came upon this highway over ascending a hill. And all of a sudden, our lights just shine on this big-ass owl, man. He had a head the size of a cantaloupe. And the wingspan had to be at least 6.5, 7 foot. But I remember full-blown semi-truck, me and my buddy driving towards this owl, this white owl. It was it left whatever it was eating on the ground, whatever meat it was eating, and flew towards our truck. And I remember seeing that owl's head, dude. It was the size of a cantaloupe or bowling ball, and then smacked our windshield, and then flew into the driver's side window, mirror, knocked that sucker, because you can adjust them. That owl literally knocked that sucker kind of loose. And, I shit myself. My buddy and I were talking about that for a while, man. Some other Texas stories. Yeah, there's a other highway here, northeast of Houston, Lufkin, Texas, Highway 59, man. There's some strange things that happen over there all the time. And I'm in the sleeper. My buddy Lewis is driving, team driver. And I'm on my phone chatting with the wife, chatting away, and I'm off. Just so happened around 10, 11 o'clock at night. Anyway, I'm sitting there talking to the wife, and all of a sudden I hear, my buddy slamming the brakes, pulling the air horn, cussing, "Get the fuck out of my way," telling this lady. Because I had gotten up, I opened the curtains. This lady walking on the lines of the divided highway. My buddy nearly pancaked her, but luckily he did it. He had to swerve, and mind you, on these 59 roads, man, on East Texas, there's no street lights whatsoever. The only lights are obviously going to be for the semis or passing the vehicles. But yeah, I don't know if that lady wanted to end her life or she was right in the head. Also, in Tennessee, where my buddy had backed up to a mattress warehouse. They had a load of mattresses. And it's sketchy, this place we had went to. I just remember he told me, I wasn't awake, he told me the story, but when he backed up and got ready to hook the trailer, when he hooked the lines, he peered to the back of the rear of the trailer, and there's this tall, dark, mysterious, you know, you couldn't see, you saw a shadow, but you realized it was a man. My buddy said the only way out for that guy was crawl under the trailer or go straight between the trailer past the truck, and that guy chose that. He rushed him, tried to rush past my buddy. My buddy got ready to punch this guy's lights out. Buddy's about 6'3", 280, and he said the guy is about the same height, same weight. But, he said my buddy Lewis got ready to punch this guy. But all the guy did was sidestep, run around him, and bump shoulders and kept on running. But I was like, man, luckily we didn't, there were no incidents. He didn't get, stabbed or shot or, it could have been worse. I don't know what that guy was doing, but yeah, I was asleep the whole time. I was like, dude, you should have woke me up. But after that, we started carrying around a flashlight with a baton, kind of like flashlight baton combination, I guess. But yeah, man, those are my stories, man. I love the show. Been driving about 8 years, and you and your pops keep up the good work, man. I love it. Take it easy.
All right, Emery, I will take it easy, and you take it easy too. So, Dad, I think that what that lady was doing on the side of the road was that she was just being a responsible human being and giving herself a sobriety test.
Is that what that was?
That's what she
was
doing.
Is that what we call that
nowadays?
She was
walking the line, making sure she's safe to drive. Where else to do that other than on the side of the road? That's right. What I think. Hey, Emery, I'll tell you what, man. A word of advice, though, in all seriousness, start planning your routes and your days better so that you can park the truck at 10 p.m. at night so you don't have to be driving.
It seems like everything happens at 10 for you. So.
Yeah.
But no, that was really cool to hear from you, Emery. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, it was great, man. So those are the voicemails. And once again, if you want to call the voicemail line and leave us your stories, go ahead and shoot us a call at 515-585-MERC. That's 515-585-6375. We should make that a jingle.
We should.
Call us. I'm not even going to try. Dad, we got Luke coming on the show this week. Let's get to him right now. All right, today we got Luke on the show. Luke, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
We're doing well. Yep.
Yeah. So, Luke, man, you're in the Pacific Northwest, Washington State. I know you've driven in the Seattle area for a little bit, but you're relatively a new truck driver, right?
Yeah. Last 2.5 years with a little bit of time in between jobs. But before that, you know, I was farming. So, you know, on a smaller scale, you know, constantly hauling equipment and hay, you know, with a 1-ton pickup and a flatbed. So always been around trucks, but I didn't get my CDL till I was 21, 22, and started with a bigger company and wasn't crazy about that. And now I'm with a much smaller company and doing bigger stuff, side dumps and low bed and backer trucks and dump trucks and, you know, something different every day, which I definitely prefer.
Yeah. So you grew up as a farmer's kid? Is that how it all worked out for you with the farming?
I grew up on a small 5-acre hobby farm and had some really good friends that we bought hay from, and I grew up with their boys, and they ran a little bit bigger farm running cattle and, you know, made their own hay. And again, nothing huge. It was just a family farm. And, I started working with them off and on from the time I was 8. And then when I was 16, I kind of started working for them full time. In high school, you know, not quite 40 hours a week during school, but then, you know, all summer, you know, 60, 70 hour weeks out in the field, bucking hay and moving cows and all that fun stuff.
That's really cool. What actually got you interested in the trucking end of things? Like what was there something that inspired you? Is something that, you know, kind of sparked the interest in you for to drive truck?
Well, right after high school, I knew I didn't want to farm forever. So just, you good there?
You keep going. It's okay.
All right. Alrighty.
Caught him by surprise. He's okay. He's up.
Too bad that wasn't on video.
Alrighty.
Oh man, Jack, lead that in. That's funny. Wow, that went down the wrong pipe.
You got some water there, bud?
That's the problem. I was taking a swig of water and it went down the wrong pipe. My God.
Woo! Oh, that was funny, dude.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. Always at the most inopportune time, you know.
Woo! Oh, anyways, you're a farmer. I don't even remember what my dad asked.
Back to Luke. What sparked the interest in trucking?
That's right.
So go ahead, Luke.
Well, right after high school, you know, I gave college a try, and that just wasn't for me. So jumped on Craigslist and started going through ads and saw something for a diesel mechanic working on big rigs. And, you know, I had various wrenching experience from the farm, and I just kind of made my resume sound really good and got into that gig. Again, a small company, and I started working on big trucks, all on the job training, never really went to school for it. And I really liked that. And I did that for about a year until I tore a disc in my back. So I was like, all right, can't do this anymore. And it took me a couple of years to recover from that. And I was kind of like, well, now what do I do? And it was just like, you know, I've looked at other gigs and having a CDL, excuse me, having a CDL in my back pocket, I can't go wrong with that because there's tons of other fields I can go into that that can come in handy, even if I'm not just strictly a truck driver. And so went and got my license and started working for a topsoil company, hoping to get into a dump truck or something like that. But instead, I was running blower trucks, spreading mulch, 3 and 4 axle straight trucks that had this big hopper in them with a live belt and augers at the back. And we had like 300 feet of hose on board, and we could go, you know, do like big industrial complexes that had flower beds and stuff. And we had spread mulch that way instead of having to do it with, you know, a truck and a wheelbarrow.
Right.
And, you know, do yards and stuff like that. And that's how I got started in it.
Nah, it's really cool.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned about the back issue you had. Let me ask you, cause I know you're 24 now. And so, I mean, the back issue happened when you were younger. How'd you feel mentally when that happened? Because I can relate to that. I was, I think, 27 when I jacked my back up driving truck, and I felt like my world was ending. Like, I felt like I'm going to be a handicapped for the rest of my life. I was depressed. I remember, you probably remember that, Dad.
Yep, I do.
I mean, my back was on fire. It, like, there was days that I'd be driving the truck and it felt like it was bone against bone. Sometimes it felt like it was nerve damage. Sometimes it felt like it was muscle. But I'd be crying sometimes driving the truck because it hurt so bad. And I was like, is this what the rest of my life holds for me? I'm 27. How'd you feel when you had that bad back?
Oh, I was completely crushed. I was used to being Superman, you know, yeah. Be able to do whatever I wanted. And, you know, going from that and then, you know, a year of physical therapy and, you know, pretty much not being able to get up off the couch, you know? And it kept giving me problems, And, you know, I got to the point where I could still do stuff and really just started fighting it and got into powerlifting. And, along with a lot of chiropractic work and stuff like that. And I'm pretty much back to where I was before I injured it. And to be in this place now mentally, best thing for me, cause it absolutely crushed me. Yeah. I couldn't stand the thought of that being the rest of my life. Cause, you know, I had the nerve pain and, you know, the shooting pains down my legs, and I don't wish that on anyone.
No.
Right. I hear that.
And
I quickly realized I can't be Superman anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things we learned. And, you know, it's a good thing we learned that lesson early on. Because imagine what our body would be like if we didn't learn that until our 40s.
I mean, how old were you when you missed your backup?
I guess I was in my late 20s.
Late 20s,
yeah,
too?
Yeah.
I remember they you had that surgery and they dug a hole in your back. And everything. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Looked nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah.
In fact, that was right about 25.
That was the other thing. I was like, I'm 20 years old. I'm not getting my back cut on this young, because I've known plenty of other people that have had back problems, and granted the surgeries have gotten much better, but you know, when they were still fusing backs and all that, I'm like, I'm not dealing with that and having it last 10 years and, you know, have to keep go through this surgery cycle.
Yep.
We just had a guy at work. He's had a bad back for years, and He re-injured his back again, and he finally had a surgery on it because the shots weren't working and stuff.
Right.
And he swears by it. He said, my back feels amazing. He said, it feels as good as new. That's good, but I've heard way too many stories of people just, you know, having awful horror stories of experiences after the surgery, and they wish they didn't have the surgery. And so, I don't know. I've never gone to the doctor for my back, and I've just kind of suffered with the pain. Mm-hmm. The first 6 months of it was a nightmare. And then, you know, it's just now it's just whenever you do something, you tweak it and you have to kind of live with the pain for a while. But I think I constantly live in pain to a certain degree. I just don't realize it anymore. But that's synonymous. I mean, that's something that truck drivers have. I mean, they get bad backs. Yep. And, you know, it's just part of the industry.
It goes with the territory.
Well, and I remember you saying something on one of the other episodes that your company gives you like 30 or 40 chiropractic adjustments a year.
Right. Yep.
That's awesome. I swear by chiropractors.
Oh yeah. Me too.
Maybe I should try it.
I mean, I have gone. There's a lady that I use in Kutztown, and she is fantastic. It's funny. It's like the weirdest thing. You get down on the bench there or whatever, and she knows right where to touch. It's like I don't know how she knows. I honestly don't.
It's black magic.
I was like, how did she? She went right over that spot. And she said, "This is where it's at." And I was like, "Yeah, how'd you know? I mean, your back is long. You know what I mean?" Yeah. It's like, and she hit just right on that spot, and she knew just what to do. And
it's sorcery.
It almost seems like it, but I tell you what, when you get up and you walk away, and you're like, "Wow, this feels awesome." You know,
our mechanic, I'll tell him, I got to take off. I've got a chiro part appointment. And he goes, all right, have fun at your witch doctor.
You know what? I don't care what people think. I know it works. You know, that is what I know.
Exactly.
So when you were blowing the mulch, you're like, I'm very unfamiliar with what you just said about your job description there. Are you saying you have a truck that blows mulch up onto buildings that are like five stories?
Yeah. So when I started with that company, I was supposed to be with another driver and train for, 3 or 4 weeks. And, it was my first driving job. So got to learn how to drive the truck and then also learn how to run it. It's got a big computer system on it, and we've got a remote that we link up to it on our belt to be able to control the truck remotely. And I was like a week in, and a driver called out, and my dispatcher goes, "Well, you're going to be on your own today. I set you with a good laborer, to help you. He knows how to run the truck. So pretty much all you got to do is drive and, drag the hoses." And, she had messed up on, the paperwork and sent me to this job where we were doing two different rooftop gardens. And, so we string out all the hoses from the truck and then got to hoist them up to these gardens. And, I'm completely out of my league. And, I've been doing this a week now. And, it's a pain. You've got to adjust the airflow, how much air the pump's trucking versus how much, the feeder is feeding into this, pipe at the bottom where it connects to the hose. And it's really easy to clog the hoses, and when you do that, you got to lower everything down and unclog the hoses manually. And it took us way longer than it should have, but we got it done. And my dispatcher was extremely apologetic, like, "I'm really sorry, shouldn't have sent you on that one. Paperwork got messed up." And after that, I was, training was over. I was on my own after that.
Yeah. I mean, kind of makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of what we did was residential, people that wanted mulch put around, their garden beds around their houses and stuff. Which around Seattle and Bellevue, and Mercer Island, all really tight access areas where, I'd call them and ask, what their driveway looked like and all that. And they're telling me, "Oh, well, the propane truck can get in here just fine, or the FedEx truck can." I'm like, "Ma'am, I weigh 70,000 pounds. I'm not a FedEx truck."
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta love it when you ask for directions like that, and they're like, "Oh yeah, the big rigs get in here all the time, the 59 footers."
Yeah.
Okay. That's when you know they don't know what they're talking about.
No diddly.
Exactly. And the truck I mainly drove was a four axle with the drop axle at the back, and a lot of times we'd have to back into these driveways, and my DOT bumper sat pretty low. So as I'm trying to angle up these driveways, I'm flipping my drop axle up and down, just trying to get it up and trying to steer that drop axle, which, you really can't do, but just crazy stuff like that. And, have to have my laborers jump out and grab a shovel and climb the ladder on the back of the truck and be holding up the palm line so I can fit under it. And it was probably the best first job I could have gotten, because I got into tons of situations where it's like, well, this can't be any worse.
Yeah.
I
totally understand.
Yeah, trial by fire.
Yep. But you know what? That is, you're right. That is the best way to learn, because that is, you know, you won't forget that. You know, you can have somebody tell you how to do it, yeah, or you can do it. And when you do it yourself, exactly, there's a sense of accomplishment for you, and you don't ever forget what you did in order to make that happen.
Yep.
So it's, experience is a great teacher.
Yeah. And
always.
That's kind of like the idea of, we're in America. You can change jobs if you want to. The idea of changing jobs, I'm not looking to change jobs. I really like my groove that I'm in at Pitt, Ohio. And the idea of going to another place and learning the whole new system, because like Luke said, it's, you have to learn the little things with every job, you know? And even if it's another LTL carrier, you learn their systems, and they have different customers you're delivering to, and tricky spots that you don't know how to back into until you actually have to do it, you know? Like, there's a spot...
Exactly.
There's a spot in Pottstown that I do almost on a weekly basis, multiple times a week. It's on South Street, which right there, anytime you have to do a delivery on a place called South Street, usually it means it's a tight road. It's just the way it is. And at least around here. And it's a residential road with a business on it, and they have a dock, but it's only one dock. And right next to the dock, I mean, right next to the dock, is the wall of the building. And you sight sight in, which is nice, but right across the street, it's cars parked for the residentials. And when you're driving down the road, there's cars on each side of you, just enough space for your truck to fit through. Mm-hmm. And you gotta back in. Usually it's 48. You back in a 48 footer to this dock. And the first time I did it, it took 10 minutes to get in that door. But when you do it enough, last time I was there this past week, I did it in one shot, right? You know, and people are like, wow, you actually did that in one shot. Most guys can't do it. I'm like, I do it enough. Don't you recognize me?
Right.
You know, like if I didn't, if I'm coming here all the time and I still can't back it in, just call the Pitt, Ohio, and tell them this guy sucks, you know?
Take my license.
Yeah. Like I probably shouldn't be doing the job then. But,
right.
Yeah. I totally.
You're paying me for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, to be honest with you, I told my dad this before, I kind of enjoy the hard backings. Mm-hmm. Like I got a twisted mind like that. I like the challenge. And for me, it's kind of fun. It's just like, okay, turn the radio off, put the windows down, especially like this place that I back into. If you get too close when you're backing in, even sight-sighting, that overhang on the trailer could scrape the wall. Mm-hmm. So I put both windows down. I don't care how cold it is, so I can hear if I'm tapping something. Because, I mean, if I tap something, okay, we already had an accident, but I don't want to have it more of an accident.
Right.
You know? Like, I don't want to just be scraping out the whole wall.
Right.
So it's bad enough to touch
exactly.
it at all.
Exactly. Tapping something's, you know, the best thing is to, you know, not freak out or, you know, just stop, assess it, gather your senses and go from there. You know, worst thing you can do is make a decision right then. And that's when you end up tearing stuff up even more.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So with this first job that you had, you mentioned that you had crazy repairs. You had crazy repair stories. What's that all about?
Oh, you know, just stuff like, like I said, we carried 300 feet of hose. And so I'm not by the truck. Usually I'm usually in a backyard or, you know, in a big parking lot and I can't see what's going on. And, on the back of the truck was where the feeder was. And the truck I drove was, I think, one of the oldest in the fleet because I was the new guy. And we had a big piece of metal blow out on the feeder, fed into this hopper where the big air compressor on the truck would blow the material that's getting fed in into the hoses. Had a big piece of that break off, and you know, I'm just doing my thing back there, and all of a sudden I'm getting less and less material, and so I keep cranking up the air and cranking up the feeder. I'm like, oh, what's going on? Finally go back to the truck, and this piece of metal had, you know, busted off, and there, of course, it was an expensive car, like a Porsche or a Beamer, you know, parked behind the truck. And yeah, I've just blasted this car with mulch.
Wow.
And
oops.
Yeah. Oops. And, so we're like, well, still got, you know, a full truck. I've got three jobs, you know, this course first thing in the morning, still got multiple jobs to do. And so we're, down there, you know, finding anything to patch this up, cardboard and duct tape. And it was always stuff like that with an older truck. Stuff was always breaking, or have an auger bolt, shear bolt break off. And we technically weren't supposed to climb in the back of the trucks because a couple of years ago, you know, there had been a bad accident with someone in the back of the truck and the driver didn't know and fired it up. But wow. Yeah, I won't go into detail into that. So, you know, back there, you know, not going to wait for the mechanic to come out. I just want to get it done. So back there trying to line up these augers and telling my labor, you know, when to turn it so I can get this bolt lined up. And now where I'm at, I've had even crazier stories, you know, doing roadside repair, which, you know, I prefer being able to do that than to break down and just call a mechanic and have it be their problem. I like being able to fix my own stuff and get myself back on the road.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's one of the things that, I mean, even with all the years I've been doing this, I don't know that much about the mechanics end of it. You know, it's like, and I think, you know, our company kind of wants us to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, we have mechanics. That's, but doing what you know, doing something like that where you kind of have to have hands on, you know, you're hands on. This is not like you can, you know, like you said, it just stops you. If you just sit there and say, okay, well, I'll wait for the mechanic to get here now, you know, nothing's getting done. And, you know, you still got the rest of your day to go through.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate the thought of wanting to be able to work on things and fix them yourself. That's a good attitude to have. Really a good attitude.
I think it was two winters ago. I was, driving down the turnpike and I lost my heat, and the temperature was like in the teens. It's probably like 15 degrees outside. And, it was freezing. And so,
oh, that's brutal.
So I went in the back of the truck. And I had a skid that was like, it had a big, heavy, it was heavy, and it was like a box. It was like a Gaylord tote kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I took the top cardboard off and I went to the front of my truck and I put it against the radiator, just covered the whole thing. And I took ratchet straps and I rigged it to my bumper and around the mirror, and there were fluorescent green ratchet straps. And so like, there's this like two fluorescent green ratchet straps going across the my grill in an X with a big hefty piece of cardboard in front of it. I cut some holes in it so that it could get some air to breathe.
Yeah.
And it worked. I mean, I had heat and everything. And I went about my day not thinking about it. I was like, ah, works great. You know, I get back to the terminal, I unhook, I park the truck, I just leave it like that. And I come in the next day and my boss comes over to me and is like, do you drive 1442? I said, yeah. And he's like, don't ever drive with it like that. And I said, well, I lost my heat. What do you want me to do? He's like, call breakdown.
Right.
He's like,
that's what they want you to do.
He said that's not like, that would have flown off and gotten a car and they had an accident. And I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. Right. You know, but it was secure. It really was secure. Like, I mean,
thankfully it didn't go anywhere.
I drove all day like that. It didn't move at all. Like, it was ratchet straps. Like, those bad boys weren't moving.
It's not going anywhere.
No. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the only time I was
for
hands-on.
Most big companies, I can appreciate, you know, why they don't want drivers doing that. You know, you're a driver, not a mechanic. But yeah, I'm fortunate I got the experience turning wrenches on these trucks before I got my license. You know, I know what's going on. I know what to look for. It just makes it a lot easier.
Oh yeah. I think it's a good thing. I think it's great that you have that experience, that you drag that with you when you start driving. That's a good thing. It really is.
So, that was your first driving job. Now you've moved on to another job. Was it a happy departure from that job, or was it like, is there a story there?
You know, I wouldn't work for him again. And a lot of that's, I didn't have a schedule. Every night I had to call in to a dispatch line and find out whether or not I'm working the next day. And you know, during the summers, a lot of times we were working 13, 14 days straight without a day off. Mm. And, the job was extremely physical. So yeah, it wasn't a bad departure. You know, I gave them plenty of notice and offered to try and help find another driver, but it's not something I would do again.
Okay. I got you. Yeah. I mean, sounds like a job I wouldn't apply to. So anyways,
but you know, it's always good to leave a job and not burn the bridge. You know, you never know when you might need that. And it's just not, you know, to me, it's not good business practice personally. You know, so I think you handle, you know, when you leave, it's always good to leave on good terms. You know, do the best you can too. So that's a good attitude.
Yeah, you never know who you're going to run into down the road. Exactly. And exactly, why burn that bridge?
Yep, always. That's my approach always.
Yeah.
It tries to be.
So where are you working now?
Working for a really small land development and underground utility company. Yeah, we're small. We've got two drivers, an operator, a mechanic, and the boss man.
Oh, wow. That's not big at all.
Yeah. That's cool, though.
Yeah. So, and we do mainly like prevailing wage work, putting in power and water and storm lines. Like we just finished up a big fire department job. And we did all the clearing for them and, you know, put in all the utilities and all that good stuff. So that's what I do now. But a lot of times, yeah. So I'm not always in the truck. Some days I'm a pipe layer. Some days I'm a laborer, but most of the time I'm in the truck. And when we don't have trucking for me to do, I go out on rent and haul for other dirt hauling companies or, demolition companies hauling concrete. I run a side dump for the most part now.
Okay. So you mentioned about how you were thrown in a side dump with no trailer experience. How was that?
That was interesting. I'd say. You know, so I went and met with the owner of the company and, you know, to apply, and we maybe talked 10, 15 minutes. And he's like, so you want to drive a side dump? I said, well, yeah, I want to drive, you know, whatever you got, but if it's a side dump you want me to haul, then yeah, I guess I want to learn how to do that. And he's like, well, I just bought one and we've used it a couple times. I've never ran one before, but you know, I hear they like the tip, and so don't do that. But you know, I'll have Jesse, our other driver, you know, roll with you for a day, and yeah, after that you're on your own. Don't mess up.
Good advice.
So that's how I got started with that. And, you know, luckily there's a lot of really solid drivers around here. So, you know, I started going out on rent hauling for other companies and a lot of owner operators and other small businesses that do this. And everyone could tell I was the new guy, you know, the FNG.
Right.
And, you know, had some guys give me pointers and tips. And for the most part, I got dispatched with a couple really solid drivers that have been doing this for 20 plus years. And they just, you know, at first I wasn't sure why I was getting put with them. I'm sure at first it was, you know, because I needed babysitters. And I still roll with those guys. And I'm not sure if it's because I earned the right to roll with them or because everyone thinks I still need a babysitter. But
how long are you there?
I've been doing this a year and a half now.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll tell you what the mindset is there with an older guy. If you've picked up on the job and they respect you, you're still rolling with them. Yeah. If they think you need a babysitter, you'd know they think you need a babysitter. Yeah. So yeah, you're doing okay. You're doing good. You're doing all right.
And even with like, I don't know how it is at Allentown, Dad, for you guys up there, but for my Norristown terminal, a new guy comes in, and it's kind of similar mindset, I guess. Like most of the guys that have been there for long, like I consider myself been there for a while. I mean, I'm 8 years now. If you're not there for 2 years, 3 years, you're lucky if we know your name.
Yep.
Because like, I mean, it's okay. Congratulations. You got the job. Now let's see if you can handle it.
Yep.
And that takes some time to sort through. Even if you make it through your 90 days, it's like, that's great. You're here, but are you going to be really here? You know? And I've seen way too many guys go in and out, be there for a year or two, and they get let go for something stupid. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, yeah, I made friends and then I lose friends because they get fired. I'm like, okay, I'm not talking to you unless you're here for 3 years.
If I know you're serious about being here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I get that too high of a turnover rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And well, you know what the thing is, It's like Tony said, a lot of times it's just the dumb things that catch you. And it's like, you know, we just, I won't, I will not say names.
Do it.
But I'm just going to say, you know, we had a guy a short time, less than a year, and he, you know, got caught over the speed limit several times, got written up for it, got suspended for it. And after a while, it's just, you know, the company's going to end. So, you know, if you don't get to know the new guy's name right away, there's a reason. Yeah. You know, you're just kind of looking at it like, okay, we'll see how this thing works out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there, especially in what Tony and I do, you know, the company regulates itself a lot.
Yes.
You know, they do a really good job with that. And I'm appreciative of that. Sometimes it seems like it's burdensome, but it's important. It you know, it's an important aspect of what we do. And so...
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you do. You just, I've been at the same company here for 23 years. I've seen a lot of guys come, a lot of guys go, and I've seen a lot of guys come and stay, yeah. You know, and that's how I moved up the seniority list. I'm glad they do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's a good thing.
Yeah. I like seeing my name move up the list, but, yep. And at my terminal, we have guys who have been there for 30 some years. I mean, right. We're the number 3 terminal. So, yeah. I mean, guys have been there for a long time, but I'm also seeing those guys retiring now, and it's just like, oh yeah, hey, it's good knowing you, but it's time for you to get out because I got to move up in seniority.
Yeah, I'm coming for your spot.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's some of the people you don't mind seeing go, but some of the people it's like, oh man,
yeah,
like,
they were a good guy, yeah, or whatever. You enjoyed their company, or. Yeah, they like were a good guy to talk with or whatever.
Every once in a while, I mention on the show about me having Philadelphia maps in my truck.
Right.
Well, I was given those by a guy who retired, mm-hmm. and I don't use. In fact, just this past week, I threw them out. I got rid of them because I don't use them. You know, and
that's
just
nostalgia, dude. You just hold on to it. You just hold on to it.
But hey, man. So Luke, you have experience driving oversized, overweight loads, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, overweight at first because, you know, with dirt hauling, you know, you roll into a site and they load you up. And, of course, at first, I don't know what, you know, approximately what legal looks like as far as weight and what legal doesn't look like. And, you know, in a lot of places we dump, we're not scaling in. We're just going into these dump sites and dumping and... A lot of those sites are just a mess, you know, if you're off-road in an 18-wheeler.
Yep.
Which that was a whole new experience for me, too. And, of course,
yes, it
I was running you know, double coin street tires at first, and it finally got something with some grip on there. But at first, I was constantly getting stuck and, you know, just buried up to the axles in mud. And, you know, then started rolling to some dump sites that we were scaling in, and I'm looking at my weight and going, oh boy, it's, you know, quickly found out that the higher number, you know, on the scale doesn't mean you win.
that's one way to put it.
and that's just the nature of the beast with dirt hauling. You never really know. You get a rough idea. And again, really happy I got to experience that at first and, you know, didn't get any legal trouble. You know, it made me be a lot safer driver, you know, and knowing what the limits of the truck are. And I had been doing that 3 or 4 months, and my boss approaches me and goes, well, today you're going to be a low boy driver. Okay, well, you know, I've never done that. He's like, no, I'll give you a quick rundown on how to separate the trailer and all that.
Wow.
So we spent 15, 20 minutes going, you know, hooking and unhooking the trailer a couple times. And I want to say I was hauling the machine to Seattle the first time. And it's like just under 11 feet wide. So I think I've got 3 inches until I technically need chase cars.
Wow.
And we're not a big enough company where we have enough people to, you know, jump in a rig and, you know, be a chase car for me.
Right.
So, we get the machine on and he's like, all right, well, just drive slow, be careful, and the road's yours. Yeah. Cars will get out of the way. Good luck. I'll see you down there.
That makes you feel real confident.
oh yeah. And, you know, of course it's permit load and, I think for overweight and oversized, if I remember right. And so I started heading to Seattle, and again, just one of those trial by fire things. And, you know, of course, taking every corner way too wide, but I was like, I'm not even going to try and fit in the lane. I'm just going to take the whole road, and people get mad and honk and flip you off. And, you know, got people yelling at you, but you just learn to ignore it and, you know, do what you need to do.
Yes, you do. That is it. That's the truth.
That's one of the hardest things to, I mean, maybe not for everybody. For me, it was like, I don't like inconveniencing other people. And so driving.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. So like when people are honking at you, flipping off, you like, you feel bad. You're like, oh, and it kind of in the moment, you're like, oh, I feel bad. But then like the next time you're in a situation similar to where you got flipped off or honked at, you're like self-conscious about it. You're like, oh, I don't want to piss anybody off. And it's just like, you get to the point, you're just like, I'm big, I'm slow, I'm in people's way. It's my job to be in your way. I'm sorry. And it's
get
like,
over yourself.
It's just part of the job. I mean, yeah. It's like, it's it might as well be part of the job description. Your job is to take
you're
the
in
bird,
the way.
You know? So
you're in the way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's like, gee, sorry, you're going to be 5 minutes late for your lunch date or wherever exactly. You're going.
I'll tell you what, when I first started doing city work,
yeah.
And this is like almost 30 years ago now.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. One of the things I learned was when you're making a turn and if people don't want to get out of your way, I can make this turn and I can set my brakes. And I did it once.
Yeah.
I was making a turn. Somebody didn't want to back up. I set my brakes. I'm like, I can sit here as long as you can do.
Yeah.
We're not moving until I move. Nobody's moving until I move. So either you're going to back up or we're just going to, we'll sit here and have a stare off contest.
Yeah.
And eventually they back up. You know, they get it because there's nothing you can do. You've got to do what you've got to do. So you do it. And
I was,
you just, you know, sometimes you just have to, you know, I'm going to say this and you have to grow a pair.
Yeah.
And
just do, exactly.
You know, you just got to do what you got to do. And most people respect you. Most people do.
Yeah.
Most people want to be helpful. You know, they do. And you just get those people who will, you know, flip you off. And, you know, then they try and move out of your way by moving forward and skirting
yes.
over away from you. You
yes.
know, like that's like, helping. It's like, and
most,
if you just backed up, we'd have been
most
in good
time
shape.
The most time when they're in your way, it's because they're over the white line. It's
yes.
just like,
that's it. That big white line.
If they would just look in the rearview mirror, they'd see that the person behind them is way behind them. They could back up, but they get scared. I was doing a delivery and I was coming off this road and it was a T at a red light. So I was making a right-hand turn and there's a white line way back because they know trailers need to make a really hard turn at this spot.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady, I mean, it happens a lot that, you know, people come over, but they typically back up or whatever. It's all good. And I'm patient. But I make this turn and this lady, I mean, she's right up. I think she's probably about 2-3 car lengths ahead of the white line.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pull up in front.
Of course.
I pull up in front of her, and you can see like they. And Luke, I know you've seen this. Like when that happens, and you need to make that right turn, and they have to back up, you could see the paranoia in their eyes because they don't know if you can see them, or you're going to hit them. They're scared. You can get. Yes. You're going to get smushed.
And, oh yeah, their eyes get all big. Yeah. And they're looking at their mirrors. And
yes.
And so she's backing up, but like she's physically agitated.
Mm-hmm.
And as I start slowly making that turn, as she's backing up, I'm moving forward so that you know I can get through. As soon as I start making that turn around her, she's beet red, flipping me off, yelling out her window at me. I'm like, are you stupid? Like, what part of this scenario do you think is my fault as a truck driver?
Right.
That you had to back up.
Yep.
Like, and it's not like I ran you over. It's not like you hit anything. You had plenty of space to back up, but she was beet red, furious anger. She had like a toddler in the back seat. I'm like, I feel bad for that kid.
Yeah.
But you know, it's
well, and yeah, I hate to be this way, but the answer to your question is yes, she is.
Yeah.
What was my question? I forget.
Are you stupid?
Oh, hey, Luke said it, lady, not me. I'm sure she hates truckers now. She's going to listen to this show.
There is a big white line there. There's a stop line, and so many people exceed that. They move past that. That's part of the problem.
I think it's probably one of the biggest pet peeves of us drivers.
Yeah, that's something that people could learn.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that white line is there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And just
yeah,
stop
I've
there.
Thought multiple times, you know, for all the driver's ed that kids have to go through now, I know it's different state to state, but it's something like 40 hours of classroom and 20 hours of driving here in Washington State just to get your driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really think they should do a big section on, you know, big rigs on the road and how to navigate, you know, around them and with them.
Yes.
Because with as many trucks are on the road, yeah, I think that should be taught and pretty common knowledge, but it's clearly not.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. I agree with that 100%. That is something that is overlooked all the time, and people don't know how to deal with big trucks.
I've thought about when I'm old and retired from driving, doing part-time work as a driver trainer, where I not for trucks, but for kids learning how to drive, just so I can be that guy in the passenger seat saying, "See this truck here? This is what you're going to do when you're around the truck," and just start putting that in their heads at a young age and stuff. Because you know, I want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem, friends. I want to help the next generation of drivers to be more efficient out on the roads.
Look at you! You're so altruistic. I'm
yeah,
telling
I,
you.
I wish I wish there was a badge for that. But yeah, no, it's something I thought would be fun. But at the same time, I think I'd probably, you know, have a heart attack. I'm scared to just teach my own son how to drive in 13 years.
You got a lot of time.
Yeah. It's scary though, to think about.
You'll calm down in time. Don't worry about that. That's fine.
But
I was lucky on that one. I think I was 4 when I started driving tractors with my dad. And he had this little Ford Escort with a 5-speed in it. I think I was about 6 when he taught me how to drive a clutch in that. So, before I even got close to, you know, driving on the road, I had already had hours under my belt of driving around the farm or, driving a manual. And that's all I drive anymore. Just, I can't drive an automatic. I always go to hit the clutch and I stomp on the brakes and almost cause an accident.
There goes your ACL.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's crazy. That is really cool. That is one of the things I love about farm kids. Is they have so much life experience by the time they even hit their teens. You know, like you said, driving, using the pickup truck or using the car on the farm and doing this and doing that. There's just so much stuff that they're miles ahead when it comes to that kind of life experience stuff.
I saw a video.
Oh, yeah. I'm extremely fortunate for that. I wish everyone, you know, had those opportunities. Unfortunately, it's just not possible. But
right.
Yeah. I saw a video on Instagram yesterday of a kid. The oldest he was 13. And I don't think he was 13. And he was driving a trailer and somebody was in the passenger seat filming. And he's sitting there on the front edge of his seat, shifting gears, pushing the pedals and stuff. And like, he was intensely into it. I mean, he was ultra focused. He had hand on the shifter the whole time, not 2 hands on the wheel, hand on the shifter, just really turning and stuff. And I was like, holy crap, kid. like what country is this? Because
I know, right? I've seen that video.
Did you?
Yeah.
I think I know exactly what video you're talking about.
Like a young black kid?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the coolest thing.
He looks relaxed, but he's paying attention to what he's doing. He's good.
Zoned in.
Yep. Yep. That's cool to see. That really is.
I wonder if he was a farm kid. Maybe there was like a farm tractor or something like that.
You're right. Exactly.
That's interesting. So, Luke, man, I know in the email you mentioned about almost tipping multiple times. How, when, where, and what?
So, my side dump is a 3-axle. And I see a lot of guys running, 4 axles. And I really don't know what it is about my trailer. Also, my truck's... all bag suspension, no springs. And I know that makes a big difference. And, especially this summer was probably some of the worst. All summer I was hauling these 3 and 4 man, rocks for doing rock walls and stuff. And, each rock, ranges between probably 2,000 and 6,000 pounds. And I'd get into a spot, and you always try and find a spot to dump where the rocks are rolling away from you so they don't come smashing back into your trailer, which I had a couple do that, but that's just the way it goes. And there was one spot, it was a little hairy, but it didn't have any other place to dump. Really had to work to get in there and, popping it into high and reverse and just pedal to the floor and, hope I don't get stuck getting back in there. And I start, tipping it up and, you let a couple of the big rocks roll off so they're not just smashing the side of my trailer, as they're coming off. And couple start going, and I felt my trailer, you know, looking in the mirrors. I see one side getting kind of high. Oh. So pedal to the floor, mash that button to get it up. And yeah, I saw, you know, could tell my trailer got pretty high, and I'm looking at the ground guy afterwards. And I was like, how high did those tires get up off the ground? He's like, they hit about my belly button.
Jeez.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's happened multiple times in different scenarios. And every time it's just get those RPMs up as high as you can and get that material off the truck before it goes.
Talk about living on the edge. Yeah.
God bless you, dude.
So in those kind of situations.
It's a lot of fun.
It's fun
it
to tell.
Like it.
Yeah. It's fun to tell the stories afterwards.
Yeah.
The stories are fun.
Yeah, I mean that's
yeah, I'm pretty sure I needed a fresh set of drawers after that. But
that too. That's what the show's for, right?
I would have been
after the fact. In the fact, after the matter, it's fine. We can talk about it, but during the times that it's happening, my Lord. I mean, you know that feeling like when something happens and it's like it jolts you to the point where you literally feel the blood rushing throughout your body. Your arms get hot. And your head gets hot because you're like, that's one of those times. I mean, like
that adrenaline just surging through you.
Yes, it does. Yeah,
yeah, and that happens sometimes. And this was a dream, but just a couple weeks ago, I had just fallen asleep, and I know this because my wife was stunned that I had a dream that fast. I laid down, and like a minute later, I'm waking up yelling. But I sleep heavy, but I dreamt that I was driving my truck down the highway. And for whatever reason, I came up behind a tractor trailer, unsafely close, and they had to slam on their brakes, and I slammed right into the back of them. It scared me so bad, but like my body had that reaction in the dream, and I could feel it when I woke up. Like my blood was just boiling in my skin. It's scary sometimes when you're doing this job.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that was just a freaking dream. Thank God.
You got that right.
Oh, I remember one of those instances. It was probably in my first 6 months of doing this, and I was on 405 and doing 60 and came around a corner and traffic was just stopped, and no time to downshift to let the jakes do their thing, and it just locked them all up and smoked out 4 or 5 lanes with tire smoke. And probably had 15, 20 feet to spare before, I'm crashing into, probably a sedan or a Prius or something like that. And, I'm weighing somewhere between 90 and 100,000.
Wow.
And it was one of those things. As soon as I could, I got off the exit and pulled over and just kind of gathered myself. Like I almost just killed someone or killed a family or.
And that's the thing. I mean, with the job, you can be doing everything right. Mm-hmm. And it's just one thing that you just don't see coming could change your life, everybody else's life around you. Just a few weeks ago, I was driving in heavy rain, and I had some issues with the brakes that day. And I'm going down a hill, and I probably had about 35,000 pounds in my trailer. It was totes. So there's a lot of fluid and it's sloshing.
Yeah.
And, there's a light on this hill, and it was stale. So I'm laying off the fuel because I just didn't know when it was going to change. I figured it would change, and it did. It changed, and I had plenty of stopping distance. But with the weight that I had, like the trailer wasn't slowing down the way I liked it. Right. I rarely I have to do this with driving where I drive, but I wound up using the trailer brake and to really help me slow down. And I got it, but I was. Again, that was one of the situations where I was like, because by the time I got stopped where I needed to be stopped, traffic was already going into the intersection. And I was like, oh, dear Lord. I was nervous. I was really nervous.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, that's the nature of the beast that we, what we do. And you do get those moments where it's just, you've got to try and think, okay, how am I going to make this happen? And you got to walk through it. Yeah. It's amazing.
And when do I need to get on the horn to,
To let everybody
let people
know,
catch people's. Yep. The truck I drive is a 91 Freightliner, so no ABS. And,
that's a good one.
It is. I love it. No DEF, no computers, all mechanical.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
they don't make them like that anymore. But no, yeah, I learned real quick, you know, when it's wet out, and that was when I was still running those street tires, you know, even doing 15, 20, rolling up to a stoplight and start putting on the brakes and I'm watching my drives lock up and slowly jackknifing as I'm coming up to the stoplight and, you know, maybe 6 inches from a, you know, person's mirror and just kind of, oh, that was close. And everyone's looking at you weird and just wait for it to turn green, throw it in drive and, or, you know, throw it in first and, you get going again and straighten yourself out. But
yeah.
Let me ask you guys a question. Luke, you mentioned about laying on the horn, and I was talking to a another driver of another company. I'm not going to name the company because I don't want to get them in trouble if this is illegal. Is it illegal to not have a working air horn in your tractor? It is.
If it's there, it has to work.
Okay.
Yep.
Because he didn't have an air horn, and we were talking about something, and I said, I'll just lay on that air horn. He's like, I wish I could. And I'm like, what do you mean? He said, mine hasn't been working for a long time. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah. And I was like, oh, man, that sucks. I was thinking, like, how many times do you wind up using that? And like, if you just use the meep, meep button on your steering wheel, does anybody hear that, you know?
You can barely hear it.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if that was actually illegal or not.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yes, it is.
As far as I know, if it's there, it's got to work.
It's like the lights. Every light that's on your truck has to work. You know, when you get pulled into a DOT check, if you have a light out, that's a CSA point, you know, or several, or however their score is. If it's on the truck, it's got to work. Interesting. That's the way it is.
Okay.
That includes the heat and the AC.
Yeah.
Yes.
Were you gonna say
no kidding.
Yes.
That's good to know on the AC because mine didn't work all summer.
The AC is illegal in my book, that's for sure. If I don't have AC, I'm complaining about it.
Yep.
I just call it my summer weight loss program.
Sweat it out. Yeah, that's
exactly. You get used to it, I guess. You grew up in tractors and stuff, and of course, none of that stuff worked, or they were open cabs.
Right, sure. Exactly.
That's another job right there. The UPS guy that drives the vans.
Right.
No AC. You got to drive with the doors open. That's got to suck.
Yep.
That's got to suck. I feel bad for them.
They're in and out constantly.
I mean, their butts off.
Yes, they do.
I don't know what it's like everywhere in the country. I imagine everywhere in the country, package delivery has picked up significantly with online ordering of stuff.
Right.
Especially this year, but even just leading up to it with technology. But like in the Philadelphia area, it's highly populated. It's a lot of packages. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend that does that job, and he says he averages about 200 stops a day. Average.
That's crazy. That is just crazy.
Not including Christmas season. No, 200.
That's nuts.
I mean, those guys are booking it all the time, but they make good money to do it.
They do. They get paid really well.
They do make good money. I went to school with a guy who worked for, I want to say it was FedEx or UPS, one of those carriers. And, around here, we don't get snow enough in the lowlands to warrant having all the snow equipment. You know, so when it snows, the roads aren't taken care of, I'm sure, as well as they are up there.
Me and my dad just looked at each other like, yeah, right.
You've never been to PA in the
Pennsylvania.
I have not been up there.
You need to come in and visit and do it in January.
I would love to do that sometime.
But anyway, you were saying that they don't have the equipment out there.
And, you know, there is one day it had snowed, you know, only a few inches. But, of course, the roads were covered and slicker than all get out. And he almost got into an accident. And the next day it had snowed more and he refused to take the route. And he lost his route due to it and got thrown on a worse one, or, you know, got some involuntary time off because he refused to take a route that he thought was unsafe. And that's when he decided to go ahead and quit and went and got his CDL and got into something different. My hat's off to those guys. They get, you know, kind of like pizza boys, you know, 16, 17 years old, and they're usually the ones out in the worst stuff.
Yes. Yep. Yes, they are. And you know, the thing is, I mean, I don't need to make money that bad.
You know,
I'm happy making what I make, and I, you know, comfortable. I don't need to work and make $40 an hour. I'm okay with it.
What's the deal with you as a line haul dad? Because I know line haul drivers, they have a very set route that you gotta take because they calculate the miles. You get paid by miles.
Get paid by the miles.
If you take the long way around, you're getting paid more, and they're not happy about it. So only
get paid taking the long way around if there's an accident and you call and say, hey, you know, I have to go off route. There's an accident. You know, the road shut down or whatever. They're okay with it. As long as you call and get permission. Yes. If you call and get permission to do it, usually they're very good with that. Yep. Do whatever you need to do. That's fine. And then you just mark down however extra miles it was and they pay you for it.
Gotcha. Okay. They give you a code
for it so that everybody knows, hey, I talked to, you know, line haul control and they said, yeah, it's okay to go around.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's one thing I'm glad I don't have to deal with. I'm glad I'm paid by the hour
and
get to pick my route and take the scenic route if necessary.
And it is a good thing. I mean, I kind of miss that aspect of it. But driving at night, there is no scenic route. It's all dark. So
yeah,
exactly.
Just the way it is. So you know,
it's nice with like the route that I drive because I'm local too. So when I leave the terminal, a lot of times I knock off 2-3 deliveries before I even hit the highway. It's right down the road from the terminal. So I usually have plenty of time. So like if it's bad weather and stuff, I'm already working ahead of schedule as compared to what we need to have done for the day. I can take, you know, my time. If I need to divert my route or something, it's not a big deal. I'm not, because with us, it's not losing the mileage aspect of things as much as it is get the stuff off so you have time to do your delivery or your pickups in the afternoon without having to rush, especially during the wintertime with snow. The worst feeling is, hey, you got these 2-3 pickups you got to do and they close at 3. It's 2:00 now and you're nowhere near there and it's snowing. At that point, you're calling dispatcher like, I'll do my best. I don't like doing that. So I like the fact that I'm local, so it allows me to kind of work ahead of schedule. But Luke, man, listen, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some of these stories and just chopping it up with me and my dad.
Absolutely. I've got one more. Asked how I got into trucking. When I was turning wrenches, we maybe half an hour from our shop, and we had a truck we were doing a clutch job in. And my boss looks at me, it was probably a 3-axle tractor. And he looks at me and goes, hey, will you drive that back to the shop? And I'm looking at our only other mechanic there, and I'm like, you got your CDL? And he's like, kind of pulls me aside and says, God's going to be your passenger seat rider and your CDL holder. Just don't get pulled over. Wow. And that really hooked it into me. It's like you got in that and, you know, I was 18, 19 years old. And I'm like, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, you know, I'll be so honest with you right now. I was driving with my wife last weekend and it was raining. And I looked at her and I said, you know what, Michelle, I understand why you have a hard time driving in the dark, in the rain. When you're sitting in a car, now I'm used to most of my night driving is done in my truck. So you're sitting up, you're sitting way up above everybody. Your lights, you can see, you know what I mean? You can see when you're sitting in your car and it's like when the streets are wet, they absorb the light.
Yes.
And I'm like, you know, because she gets very nervous when she has to drive at nighttime when she drives in the dark. And, it's like, I totally get it. It's a whole different world. It is one of the things that I like. And I think to myself, I should just buy a rig to drive around in. It should be my car.
Yeah.
Just because it's so much easier to see.
Same thing. I can't stand driving at night anymore. I've got LEDs in my tractor and, you know, I can see everything, especially when I flip my brakes on and, you know, it's pretty much daylight.
Right.
And I get in my pickup and it's like, I can't see a damn thing.
Yep. It's crazy. It is crazy.
I drive a 93 Ford Ranger. And when I first bought it, the headlights were old headlights and I couldn't see anything. And so I went and I bought the brightest headlights I could get for it without going, you know, halogen or anything like that, just normal headlights. And it helps so much, but it's still, when I drive my wife's pickup truck, which is a 2019 Ford Ranger, it's so much different. Like you can see everything and it's just nice. But Luke, I'll tell you, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing these stories and just chopping it up because that's what the show's about. Just kind of talking to people and, you know, seeing how they got in the industry and swapping stories really. So I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. I've appreciated talking to you guys.
It was our pleasure. It really was.
Well, that's a show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. Dad, if they enjoyed it, what should they do? If they don't enjoy it, don't do this. But hey, if you enjoyed it, what should they do, Dad?
They should share the show, man. Share it with a friend, share it with family, share it on Facebook, share it on Instagram, and share it on Twitter.
Yes.
Share the show.
And if you really feel ambitious and you want to share the show all the time, go to HammerLaneLegends.com, hit the gear section, and get yourself some merch. Get a hoodie, a t-shirt, something you can wear and rep the show proudly. And until next week, friends, keep the hammer down in the Hammer Lane.
Sergeant on the radio hollering at me, said, "Look out over here, there come a RPG." If I ever get home to Houston alive, I won't drive a truck anymore.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.